Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life of IBD patients. For more information, the number is 1-800-492-5538. You can also log on to thesteinershow.org and click on their banner, and information about the University of Maryland Medical Systems is there on the website. We are about to discuss the issue of gay marriage, which is being hotly debated in the United States, in a handful of states around the United States of America, including Vermont, Connecticut, New Hampshire. A system of civil unions is in place. But this is something different. This is something, as many people who are advocates for marriage say, that this is something extremely different. They're talking about full rights to marriage, not forcing a church, synagogue, mosque, or temple to marry anybody that's outside the guidelines of their religion and faith, but to give people the right to marry, no matter whether they are heterosexual or gay or lesbian. And we're going to debate that this hour. We have with us joining us for a little bit here, Elbridge James, who is director of the Maryland Black Family Alliance, Jamie Raskin, who is, of course, Maryland State Senator, professor of constitutional law at American University. Peter Sprigg is a senior fellow for policy studies at the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. And, folks, welcome. Good to have you three with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Glad to be on the call.
Elbridge, tell us a bit about what's going on in Annapolis right now before we get into the heart of this debate.
I wish you could have been here. This has been a outcry, outpouring of folks from across Maryland who believe that it's time for an omission of an equal right to be corrected. There were hundreds of folks out here just saying that gay marriage is an equal right. Gay marriage is something that all communities need, and they did quite well. They did very, very, very well. And now they're dispersing and going to their to their delegate districts and senatorial districts, and continuing that positive message. It's been very good, very good.
So the political question, and we'll turn to our guests who have joined us for this discussion about where this bill is going to go. This and your organization is focused a lot on black families and black legislators. There's been a shift, it seems to me, some people are arguing, in the votes in, especially if we're talking about the Prince George's County and Baltimore City delegation. Is that just wishful thinking on your part?
No, there has been a shift. And I'm going to be very candid about this. If it is enough of a shift to make a legitimate difference, I can't say that for sure. But there has been a shift. I mean, we've come from my terminology, no love, to some understanding and acceptance, and saying yes, we will vote. It's still out in terms of who will vote for what, but we're getting more of the Prince George's and Baltimore City delegation to recognize that there's going to be a positive message sent by the black community on this issue.
And let me introduce our guests here. We have who have joined us for this conversation: State Senator Jamie Raskin, and Peter Sprigg from the Family Research Council. And Jamie and Peter, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Jamie, I'm going to just state from the start that before we get into the gay marriage thing, we were talking about you at a gathering the other night. We were kind of shocked and taken aback when you made your announcement about why you came out for medical marijuana and what you've been struggling with. We're glad you're okay.
Yeah, well, actually, I favored the medical marijuana bill and was one of the lead sponsors before I learned that I had colon cancer. The good news on that front is they removed the tumor, and I've been doing chemotherapy as sort of precaution for the future. But I'm in good shape, and but I've learned a lot about what people go through in terms of medical illness, and a lot of people are struggling with some very serious illnesses, and medical marijuana is a lifeline for a lot of people. So, you know, we had Montel Williams here the other day.
Yes.
And he said, you know, he basically cannot live without it. And, you know, why in a civilized society would we prevent anybody from getting the medicine that they need in order to survive the day?
Well, I really am glad you're okay. So,
well, that's kind of you, Mark. Thank you very much.
So let's get into the heart of the matter where we are today. The heart of the matter, folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. This is probably it's been a hot debate in the state legislature for as long as I've been covering it. And slowly the numbers have changed, but there seems to be a force this year that has grabbed hold of legislators. State Senator Jim Brochin wrote a letter to his constituents over the weekend talking about why he has moved over to vote yes on gay marriage. And there's a lot of tottering on this, and a lot has changed. I'm clear what well, both of you think. We'll start with let me start with Peter Spriggs and then go to Jamie Raskin again. And as long as you can stay with us, Elbridge, do. What do you think is changing? I know that you're opposed to it, but what do you think is changing the atmosphere about this right now?
Well, obviously, elections have consequences, and Maryland was one of the few states where we did not see a more conservative shift in the legislature in the last election. So that's made a difference. And also, my understanding is that the makeup of some of the key committees has changed with possibly a majority in support of same-sex marriage in committees where previously it had already died. So it had died in the past. And so I think, you know, it's the simple, it's a political calculus is the essential difference that's happened in Maryland.
But, you know, we've even seen this Senator Miller, president of the Senate, saying even though he opposes the idea of gay marriage, he won't stop it from coming to the floor.
Well, you know, but I sit next to Senator Brochin in the Judicial Proceedings Committee, and we sat there for, I don't know, 7 or 8 hours last week during the hearing. And what I think impressed everybody was the presentation by the people for marriage equality. I mean, there were lots of Republicans, very conservative people, saying that they thought it was completely consistent with conservative values, that the state should not be preventing people from forming intimate partnerships, that everybody should have equal rights under the law. And it was just an extremely compelling, persuasive presentation by people from across the political spectrum. And what we got on the other side, as Senator Brochin described it to his constituents, was a lot of vilification and demonization of gay people. And he said to me, I mean, you know, I saw him just physically, palpably transform his views right before my eyes, where he just said, I really cannot stand with these people where the only argument they make is a kind of moral or religious condemnation of other people's way of life. And he said, I just can't stand on that side.
Well, I was one of the people who testified last week, and I did not make a moral or religious argument. I made an argument based on marriage, based on what is the public purpose of marriage. I think one thing which confuses a lot of people is people coming and telling their personal stories and essentially saying, you know, we want to get married for some of the same reasons that that some opposite-sex couples want to get married. But the reasons why any particular couple chooses to marry are really not central to the public policy debate. The real question for us should be, why is marriage a public institution in the first place? I mean, we don't. You don't have to get a license from the government to take a new best friend, and you don't have to get a court order when you decide not to be that person's best friend anymore. So why do we treat marriage differently from the other intimate personal relationships in our life? Why do we invite the government to be involved at all? And I think the answer to that is because of the unique role of marriage in bringing together a man and a woman for the reproduction of the human race, which is a public interest, and to keep a mother and father together to raise to maturity the children produced by their union, which is also a public interest because of the overwhelming research showing that children do best when raised by their own married mother and father. So I think that
Mark, what we
that's
saw,
really central.
Yeah, and if I could just respond to that, Mark, what we saw in the hearing was a lot of testimony by families with gay parents who are raising children, happy, healthy children, who want to have all of the same rights and all the same responsibilities that other families have. There are hundreds of rights and responsibilities that are bound up in the institution of marriage relating to, for example, exemption from estate taxes and gift taxes for property that you give or leave to your spouse, receiving Social Security or Medicare or disability benefits or insurance benefits and so on, literally hundreds of them. And, you know, what I think impressed the committee was that this is a fait accompli. There are thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of families across the country that are living this way, and we want the law to catch up with the way that people are actually living. And who are we to deny the reality of their lives, the reality of their love, the reality of their commitment, and to deny all of the legal benefits and rights and responsibilities that are bound up in the institution of marriage? And I think we're making a profoundly conservative argument here. We've got an institution that works, and it's worked, and it's changed radically over the centuries. You know, it wasn't long ago that interracial couples were not allowed to marry in this state or in most states in the country, but we changed that despite vigorous moral and religious objections being lodged against it and people saying this is the way it's always been. Well, marriage is an institution, like all great institutions, evolves, and it's ready to evolve in this way.
Well, I would say to that that some of the incidental features of marriage have evolved, but the core purpose of marriage has never evolved. It's been something universal until the last, virtually the last decade. It has been something universal throughout the world, throughout human history, across all cultures, all civilizations, and all religions. There's been one significant difference cross-culturally, which is between monogamy and polygamy, but there has never been a culture or civilization that has treated marriage as anything other than a union of male and female. And I think there is a reason
That's
for that,
true.
And it has
if
to do with...
If you go to Canada today, if you go to South Africa, if you go to lots of European countries, gay people are allowed to marry right now.
But I said until the last 10 years or so, this was the case for thousands of years of human history. So we have a radical redefinition of what marriage is that is unlike any of the other evolutionary changes that you are describing.
And I'd like to just to step in, and we understand about your concern about history and recent developments, but being an African American, we've had to put up with centuries of slavery. Slavery was once thought to be part of the normal fabric of society, and through the years, it has been shown that slavery is an abomination, and it had to change. We're looking at societies and cultures changing for the betterment of all the people in the societies and cultures. As Jamie has said, that we have families that have now have the opportunity now to be made whole, and that's a critical piece, to be made whole so that those families can be just like my family, just like your families. They can be made whole with the protections and benefits that society gives. The other point is that this law will not change how any one of us works or lives or deals with our spouses, our wives. We will continue to thrive. We will continue to go on. This makes whole part of our community that has not been made whole. And that's why we're looking forward to this opportunity.
Let me just jump in for one second and invite our listeners to join this. 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. This year, the debate over gay marriage in our state legislature has reached new heights. It may pass. It may not. If it does pass, clearly be another vote, I think, asking people to have a referendum on the state ballot to have the people decide. And I'm curious about all your thoughts and feelings about this. 410-319-8888 to join us here in this conversation. And interesting, we're having this on Valentine's Day. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll get to the calls that are coming in now in just a minute. You all raised several questions here, and it's interesting. One is the nature of marriage. And you posited one kind of definition of marriage in your opening remarks, Peter Sprigg and Jamie Raskin, a very different set. And I'd like to talk about that for a minute. One is that marriage as an institution, is it an institution, a religious institution? Is it a civil institution? In other words, when you get married, you're protected under the law, things like Social Security, retirement, benefits that you get from your spouse should they die. And on the other hand, it's an institution that came out of certain religious institutions. So, and I think part of the crux of the battle is here, Jamie.
Yeah.
And then
the
go
title
to
of
Peter.
Our bill is the Religious Freedom and Civil Marriage Protection Act. And we make very clear that no church or church-related institution should ever be forced to participate in any wedding or marriage or solemnization ceremony it doesn't want to be part of. That strikes me as, you know, an absolute corollary to the First Amendment and the Free Exercise Clause. And as a constitutional lawyer, I would defend any church that anybody tried to sue for not marrying not only a same-sex couple, but an interfaith couple or an interracial couple. Churches can discriminate how they want. However, the church cannot take its theological doctrine and impose it on the county courthouse and say, the only people who can get married here are the people that we would marry within our church. And that's the distinction that we're drawing. The public law, the civil law, has to be open to all Marylanders, black, white, gay, straight, men, women. Within your church, you can do whatever you want. And I think we've drawn the line in the exactly the right place.
Now, Peter, let me ask you this question from what Jamie just said. What Jamie's argument earlier, Bill, about what marriage protects in a very legal sense in America, and this is also an act that appears, at least, to protect churches, synagogues, mosques from having to do what is against their religion.
Well, I think that the religious protections in the bill are superfluous because I think that that the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution would protect churches and other places of worship from being forced to conduct marriage ceremonies against their will. The real threat to religious liberty is in other areas. It's not so much places of worship as such, but it's religiously based parachurch ministries and educational and social service organizations, and even individuals who are trying to live their lives in accordance with what they believe. So you have examples like Catholic Charities, which was a leading adoption agency in Massachusetts, and when same-sex marriage was legalized in Massachusetts, they could no longer place. It was against their conscience to place children for adoption with same-sex couples.
Uh-huh.
And so because of the legalization of same-sex marriage, they were barred from practicing adoption,
from placing
anyone for adoption at all.
Mark,
this is the kind of threat to religious liberty that concerns us.
Jamie, then...
Just on that point, actually what happened in Boston was that the religious institution that he's referring to, Catholic Charities, actually conducted many adoptions for same-sex couples, and then there was a split within the board about it, which is why they decided to end it after there was some publicity in the Boston Globe about the issue of that happening. But it was a completely voluntary decision on their part to stop doing it, and they had done many of them. I understand they did more than a dozen of them before, you know, some people complained. But that,
somebody decided they should act in a way consistent with their faith.
There was a split within the church, and they decided not to do any more, and that's totally their right to do so.
But I'd like to get back to I think sometimes this issue of, marriage as a religious institution is, there's too much emphasis placed on that. Actually, and I say that as a religious person, but because I don't think marriage is primarily a civil institution or a religious institution. At its heart, marriage is a natural institution rooted in the order of nature itself. There is something unique about male-female relationships that makes them different from same-sex relationships, which is that they can result in natural reproduction. And I would submit that that is the reason why marriage has existed as a public institution through all of time. And if we... change the definition of marriage to include same-sex couples, then we cease to send a message that the birth of children is important and that children being raised by their mother and father is important. And I think, that's just being out of touch with reality because birth of children is important and being raised by your mother and father is important as
Mark, if I could just say one thing on this point. You know, I sit on the Judicial Proceedings Committee, so I get to see a lot of interesting things. We have people who are in prison for life who get married. There are people on death row in the United States who get married. We have heterosexuals who've had 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 marriages. So there's a little bit too much, I think, solemnity and piety about one man and one woman because that's not what the law is. We have, you know, heterosexuals who are engaging in lots of marriages, and we know that the divorce rate approaches 40% or 50%. So when we're talking about families and what's in the best interest of the children, we saw a lot of young people come and testify that they wanted their parents to be able to marry. And that was very powerful, compelling testimony for the Judicial Proceedings Committee. That those are real children who say that they feel a sense of insecurity, that kids in straight families don't necessarily feel because their parents can't get married and they don't have all of the legal protections and the social status and the social security that comes from knowing that your parents are married.
Well, I did want to comment as well on the issue of the protections and benefits, because certainly there are legal and financial protections and benefits that are granted automatically to married couples that are not granted to unmarried couples. However, there a lot of those can be secured through private contractual arrangements without marriage. I mean, you hear people talk about inheritance, but you can leave your inheritance to whomever you want through a will. We hear talk about medical decision making, but you can give a medical power of attorney or a health care proxy to someone and without being married to that person. So I don't deny that there are differences, but I think a lot of those benefits can be secured through private contractual arrangements, and we have no objection to those.
Well, let me just say that certainly some of your allies have objections to them, because every time we try to introduce some of the building blocks of marriage, they're opposed by lots of groups, and we could go back and see where your group testified. But in any event, there are literally hundreds of such benefits and rights, and why should my constituents who are gay have to go to lawyers to try to draw up all of these complicated contracts and codicils to wills and so on when they could just get married and do it as a matter of right? Marriage is an institution that works. Why don't we want to let it work for everybody in America?
But it won't work. Same-sex marriage doesn't work at creating natural reproduction, and it doesn't work at giving children a mother and a father.
Well, you know that there are a lot of heterosexual couples who adopt. There are a lot of them who have to go to fertility clinics. And, you know, it's just striking to me that in the 21st century that you would somehow impose this as a litmus test for who can get married. You're going to disqualify a lot of heterosexuals with that test.
Let me, and Edward, you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
I know you were still there. I'm sorry, man. Let me go to the phones at 410-319-8888. We've lost a number of callers. We're dying to get in this conversation. Some of those, I think Dave, Montgomery County, others of you are listening in. Call back. We'll get you right on the air. And Kalima, let's get you on the air right now.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Peace and blessings to everybody. You know, I just wanted to say that the call that I heard first that struck a nerve pertaining to slavery. Slavery was all about the oppressed and the oppressor. Also with the separation of the nannies being in the slave master's house and the husbands being out in the work field, but yet at the same time he was there doing his thing when he should not have been doing his thing, just because he wanted to have a child by her and to humiliate the man. Two, the naturalness of a male and a female child coming into the world should not be conflicting with the children as they're coming up. There is not one child on the face of the earth that should be thinking about anal sex that is hideous, nasty, and is just filth. If you're doing oral sex with a man and at the same time he don't know the first thing with the word called a stinger, which means to cleanse oneself like you cleanse a baby every time they go to the bathroom for defecation and urination. This is what we do as servants of God.
Okay.
Yes, and we don't worry about putting feces and urine in our mouth. This is one of things that
Clima, we got
Noah had to go through.
Thank you. Albert, you'd like to grab that?
Yeah. As the Maryland Black Family Alliance, we're opposed to any child being forced to learn anything about sex prior to, you know, their becoming of age. You know, there's too much emphasis on children and sex in society now, whether it's heterosexual sex or whatever. Children should be children. They should not be subject to any kind of abuse. And bringing them into a sexual world is abuse. I think every parent, whether they're straight or they're gay, does not want their child exposed to sex. And so we're labeling and putting it on the LGBT community is clearly wrong. And everyone needs to understand that. That's number one. Number two, last year I'm sitting in a hearing with a lawyer, and he showed me a picture of his fiance, and I said, she's beautiful. He said, yeah, and I'm very proud of you. And I said, the first time I met this guy, he says, you're proud of me? He said, yeah. My mothers have struggled to raise me and bring me with all the benefits and values that every other child had, and you're fighting for my mothers. And that was a clear statement of here we have in our society, in our culture,
you know, women who are raising their children in a loving relationship, and then bringing them up so that, in fact, they have the values that every American cherishes. Let's not demagogue the LGBT community. Now, let's praise them for being part of a group of Americans that want to raise children properly. And let's give them the rights and the protections and the values that, again, the recognized marriages give other folks.
Go ahead. I know you want to jump in here with Peter, and I'll have another question.
I was just going to comment that one of the concerns, another additional concern we have about legalizing same-sex marriage is the fact that it would lead to children being taught about homosexual relationships in schools because of including them in the curriculum. And this would make it much more difficult for parents who do not approve of homosexual conduct to raise their children in accordance with their own moral views. And I think this again came up in Massachusetts, where a parent who was objected to his child, kindergarten student, being given a book about same-sex couples to bring home and read, was actually arrested because when he went to the school and protested. So this is another area where we think there will be unexpected consequences from legalizing same-sex marriage if it should happen.
Jamie.
Let me just say, we saw veterans of the Army, veterans of Desert Storm, people who've been in Iraq, people who've been in Afghanistan, who said, you know, I fought for this country, I fought for the values of America, and I come back and I'm told that I can't marry the person I love and that we're not able to inherit each other's property, or I'm not allowed to have my veterans benefits go to my loved one, they can't become my spouse. We saw cops, we saw firefighters. What we're talking about is our neighbors, our friends, our relatives, and I think we're at a point in our history where we can acknowledge that, yes, the vast majority of people are straight, but there is a minority, a substantial part of the population that's gay, and I think that we have to extend to them equal rights, and that's the history of America, that we're constantly expanding the circle of democracy to give first-class citizenship to everybody. And that's where we are. And so, you know, all these scare tactics about schools and stuff, I mean, that's exactly what happened when we got rid of the ban on miscegenation, when we allowed interracial couples to marry. And people, you know, have said the same thing all along about that, that it's going to, you know, be the downfall of civilization, it's going to destroy other people's marriages. Nobody's been able to show how allowing a loving gay couple to get married is going to harm a single straight couple's marriage. It's just not going to happen. It's going to build and expand the institution of marriage.
Well, I have a question to – well, let me go to the phones first. 410-319-8888. Before we go to – oh, should we go to break? Want to go to break now? Alex, we're going to come right back with your question as soon as we return as we talk about the gay marriage debate that is heating up in Annapolis. We'll talk about the politics of it in a minute. We'll talk about what we see where gay marriage has been allowed in this country and around the world and what has been the result of that. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in on this conversation. Stay with us and don't go away. Is the number here. We are joined this hour by State Senator Jamie Raskin, Maryland State Senator from Tacoma Park, who is also a professor of constitutional law at American University. Peter Sprigg is senior fellow for policy studies at the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C., and to report on what's been going on today in Annapolis at the Equal Rights Rally is Elbridge James, who joins us from Annapolis. He's director of the Maryland Black Family Alliance. 410-319-8888 is the number here. I promise I will go right to the phones before I ask my next questions, and I will do that. Alex, you're on the air.
I just wanted to say that I'm a long-time listener. You know, every now and then I do contribute, and it's such a blessing to have your program on, you know, just to have the Marylanders being able to voice their opinions. And I think the guests that you have and the points that you raise, you know, they're so essential to the 21st century. I can't thank you enough, you know, just for having this program and for opening the minds of everybody that does listen, you know, and learn.
Thank you.
You know, of how to and how not to in the year 2011. And, you know, the comment that I wanted to make about, you know, same-sex marriages having some kind of effect on the educational system and, you know, having some kind of a false civilization, you know, resulting at the end of it, you know, somehow it seems to me you know, the Greeks and the Romans, and certainly, you know, homosexuality predates anything that we know, you know, exists on Earth. It predates, you know, the Bible, it predates, you know, many of our religions, it predates many, many things. And I think in the 21st century, you know, to close your eyes to something that obviously has existed long before, you know, many other things have sprung up, you know, and point a finger at it and say, you know, this is where you're going to blame, you know, this is where you're going to blame the children on, or this is where you're going to blame anal sex. I mean, please, get off. It's where do these people come from? It seems like America is moving into the right direction. They have a black president, thank God, finally. You know, we're moving out of the cloud of hatredness, of the bigotry, of the cloud of, you know, scaring people. We're moving out into the age where things come to light, where the truth comes to the surface, you know, where people are learning, you know, we're coming out of the dark ages, so to speak. And what I think, you know, the Roman Empire certainly did not fall because, you know, their soldiers practiced homosexuality openly, you know, and homosexuality certainly exists, you know, in all parts of the world, in all religions, and in all societies. And just like, you know, years ago, you could blame something on the Jews, and then in the 50s, you could blame something on the blacks, you know, and now you can blame something on the Mexicans and on the gays. It's just something that exactly America does not need. You know, this is a melting pot. This is a pot of understanding. This is a pot of, you know, the cultures, of the languages, of the religions mixing, you know, coexisting, and having tolerance for everything, you know, under the sun. You know, if God has created gay people, it's for sure that other people could understand, you know, that they're creations of God and they should be left as such.
Alex, I appreciate you being part of the show and have your comments heard as Kaleem and everyone else's. Let me get another caller in here, 410-319-8888, on the way back to our guest. Bryce, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Bryce.
I'm a father with a lesbian daughter, and she and her partner.
Bryce? What happened to Bryce? Bryce, if you can call back. We'll get you right on at 410-319-8888. I apologize for that. Sometimes our phone system gets a little screwy. 410-319-8888. We'll get you right back on the air, and everybody else who calls back as well.
Mark, can I make a quick point?
Jamie, go ahead.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to leave in like 6 minutes because I've got a bunch of constituents waiting for me. But one, I want to echo the praise of the last caller for you. You really do an extraordinary public service. The second thing I want to say was it really isn't a partisan issue anymore. I think we've got members of the Bush family, the Cheney family, and the Gingrich family, all that have come out for marriage, for lesbian and gay people. And, you know, the core concept really is one of equality and freedom. And here in the free state, I think we're seeing a tremendous momentum now for this legislation. And I think what happened at the federal level with Don't Ask, Don't Tell also has really bolstered the force of this legislation, because people see that, you know, there are thousands of gay and lesbian Americans who have been willing to make the ultimate sacrifice for the country. And why shouldn't they have equal rights along with everybody else?
And James, I suppose you can hang out with us, right?
Yeah.
Good. Let me ask a question, though, then I'll go to James and Peter Sprigg here. When you look around the world right now and look around the country and see where gay marriage has been legalized, I think in our country, if I have this right, it's New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Iowa, Vermont, and Washington, D.C. I think I have that right. And in certain countries, South Africa, Iceland, Portugal, Belgium.
Holland, South Africa.
Canada, yeah. And places like Belgium has been legal since 2003, and even earlier in other countries. So I wonder, what do we know about those countries?
When you actually look at it, is that none of the parade of horribles that are advertised by the opponents of marriage have come to pass. Take Massachusetts, for example. It has the lowest divorce rate in America, and the divorce rate actually declined after gay and lesbian people got the right to marry there. So it's clear that the institution of marriage for everybody did not undermine the institution of straight marriage. And, you know, in the states that you've mentioned, you've got the lowest teen pregnancy rates, the lowest dropout rates, and so on. So it's really, I think, in societies that are able to deal with the equality of other citizens as opposed to scapegoating people, that it's, you know, that are in the forefront of this movement. And I think everybody's going to catch up and everybody's going to allow it. And 10 or 15 years from now, we'll look back on it and say, what was the big deal?
Well, I beg to differ with that evaluation, because I think we've already seen in Europe some of the concerns that I've raised about changes in family structure. And there are certain ironies in what would happen as a result of same-sex marriage. Well, first of all, if we no longer say that marriage is about encouraging the birth of children and they're raising by a mother and a father, if we remove that special incentive, then those behaviors will decline. And in fact, we've seen that in Europe. Fewer children are being raised by a married mother and father in the countries that allow it. And more children are growing up fatherless, which carries a unique set of risks, and birth rates actually are falling, and they have serious problems in Europe with birth rates. And if you do a correlation between birth and fertility rates and same-sex marriage, you find that both the U.S. states and the foreign countries that have same-sex marriage also have the lowest birth and fertility rates. Now, that's not necessarily a direct result of same-sex marriage in a sense. The legalization of same-sex marriage may be a result of these social trends that have severed the bond between marriage and procreation, but the consequences are still going to be negative for society.
If I could make this my last comment, Mark, and I'm afraid I got to excuse myself. Of course, the fertility rate's been declining for many decades in Europe, so it's got nothing to do with the laws recently passed there opening up the institution of marriage. The fact of the matter is that the reason why people have been pushing within the gay and lesbian community to be part of the institution of marriage is precisely because they're raising children. And so, you know, I think that the emphasis on procreation is a little bit off. We really should be putting the emphasis on raising children in healthy, happy, and loving homes. And there we have every reason to open up marriage to include everybody who wants to be part of it.
Thank you so much for being with us, Jamie Raskin, State Senator. Taking your time. And Elbert James, let me ask you and Peter, and move to a different area. I mean, one of the things we see is that I'm just curious the politics of it for the moment, since you both are watching votes in the State Senate and the House. And Elbridge, where do you think this is? We see 21 or 24 senators that you need to get this out of the Senate saying they are in favor. So
I think we're moving up to 23 as of today. When I was down here, I was talking to individuals who have a better handle on the count than I do. And they were looking at 23. I can't give you the exact numbers here now because I just moved away from them to figure out who are the last two that who have signed on. But if we're at 23 now, it is moving positively beginning the 24, 25 that we're looking for. And that is good. But I also wanted to go back to this issue of children and families. It's something that cannot be ignored. Again, you're not taking away from the heterosexual community. And in fact, what this bill does is that because there are families who exist now who are outside of the protections of the law and therefore do not have the advantages that their neighbors have, this bill allows a neighborhood, and that is a legitimate issue. Neighborhoods now to be made whole instead of disparate between those who have and those who don't have, allowed to be made whole. Children allowed to be made whole on the benefit side between those who have and those who don't have. And again, heterosexual couples will do fine under this legislation. Churches will do fine under this legislation. Communities will do fine under this legislation. I cannot see how children, you know, who are without now are going to suffer when this bill is passed. You know, I'm talking from communities.
Pardon me, I'm sorry.
And Mark, let me explain to our audience. Okay, I work with the NAACP. I work with black communities who see disparities. And we're looking at issues that go far beyond civil and gay marriage, but still civil and gay marriage gives them one additional lifeline that can be used to strengthen our community. Is it the is it the end all, the be all? No. We have heterosexual relationships that need to be healed. But those heterosexual relationships that need to be healed will not be affected positively or negatively. In fact, probably more positively by this bill. Because they're seeing other families now becoming whole. And that gives incentive for heterosexual couples to become whole. You know, I do not know in our conversations over the last 7 years where we have children that are raised by gay or lesbian families that have been worse off than if they were raised by heterosexual families. And I use that as my gauge. In my community and in places that I look, I use that as my gauge to see why this is a good bill, why passing it is a good thing.
Well, you know, when people come to testify before the legislature and so forth, obviously the only ones who come to testify are the ones who are happy about their family relationship. You're not going to hear from the ones who are having problems. But if you do more extensive research, as I have, you can find books carrying testimony of children who were raised by homosexual parents who resented it. And even a study that I was done just last year of children conceived through sperm donations found this. I found a startling statistic where 38% of children of raised by lesbians who were conceived through sperm donation said that they thought it was wrong to deliberately conceive a fatherless child. You've got this is 38% of these children of lesbian mothers saying the very act in which their life began was a morally wrong act because they were created to be fatherless. And
that,
so
that meant that 62% approved it.
Wouldn't you expect 98% to speak in defense of their own, the people who raised them?
But
haven't
say again, Elbridge?
When we have a 50% divorce rate in this country between heterosexuals, okay, we have 62% of those children say, thank you, I was born.
But I think you would expect it to be that number to be far, far higher. I think
thank you for loving parents that gave me the opportunity and the chance.
I doubt you'd find 38% of children who were raised by their own biological mother and father who would say that their own conception was a mistake. So it's a dramatic difference.
We're not talking about that. That is not opposite of what I'm saying. I was raised by a mother and a father. I am so happy I was raised by a mother and a father. But that has nothing to do with whether some child, and 62% evidently agreed that some child being raised by parents was the most important thing.
But I think what happens if you legalize same-sex marriage, you change all the incentives. And, you know, I do want to say something about Senator Brochin and his change of heart. I was there, and I understand who these witnesses were that he was offended by. There are two really reasons why some people oppose same-sex marriage. I've been articulating one, which is this idea of the public purpose of marriage being related to procreation and child rearing by a mother and father. There is another whole set of reasons which has to do with the fact that same-sex marriage would constitute the official public affirmation and celebration of homosexual relationships as being 100% equivalent to heterosexual relationships in their value to society. There are many people who disagree with that, some for religious reasons, some because they look at what the research shows and they see that homosexual relationships are not similar to heterosexual relationships in a lot of different ways. They're associated with negative health consequences, both physical and mental, and a lot of other negative consequences as well. Now, I think that's what some of these witnesses were testifying to, and it's a mistake to call that demonizing gay people, because what this is about is a behavior a behavior that has negative consequences.
So you believe that homosexuality is a behavior, not something that somebody's born with. You don't love a man because you were born that way. You were taught that way. Is that what you believe?
I don't believe that people are born gay. Now, when we talk about sexual orientation, we're really talking about three things. There's a lot of confusion about this. We're talking about same-sex attractions, same-sex sexual behavior, and a person's self-identification. What do they call themselves? And those three do not always coincide with each other. Now, I do not believe that same-sex attractions are a choice, but I do not believe they are inborn either. I think they're a result of developmental forces beginning in early childhood. However, a person's relationships are a choice.
But let me understand you this. Because by your interpretation, if I were born poor, I'm going to stay poor.
This is a behavior we're talking about.
But there were the behaviors in our community that keep people poor.
I don't think it's a valid comparison at all. You choose.
Well, let me bring this thing back here to the conversation again, and I want to open the phones and let people in. I just want to say, when I asked a question a moment ago about the vote, it looks very close. Senator Catherine Klausmeier and Senator Edward Kassenmeier, both conservative moderate Democrats, have said before they want to decide they're now with it, and Senator Joan Carter Conway, who's saying she's praying on this deeply at the moment and hasn't made up her mind yet. Just to put that out there for folks. 410.
I just point out that if this does pass through the legislature, there will be a referendum. We will work to put this on the ballot, and I predict that the voters will overturn what the legislature did, just as they did in Maine in 2009. Marriage between a man and a woman has been successful in all 31 states where it's been on the ballot. There's not one state where the voters have voted to endorse same-sex marriage.
Let me open the phones. 410-319-8888. Clark, you're on the air. Hi, Clark, you're on the air.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just calling to basically, back to the kid issue. You know, we got to look at the influence of having two adults raising a child. If you got two gay men raising a teenage boy, he's going to take on some of them attributes, because he's looking at, his blueprint for what a man should be, okay? And if that blueprint so happens to be gay, we might end up having a serious problem with a population of children that grow up in a situation and an environment that turn out, to be confused or misled into something that they shouldn't be, because the simple fact that we have taken what the balance that was, even in a single parent household where you got a father raising the kids or you got a mother raising the kids, that father or that mother is going to probably date 9 times out of 10, the opposite sex. So the child, be it a girl, be it a female, be it a male, would have an ideal of what, that they're looking for in life.
Okay, only in the interest of time, because we don't have a lot of time left, let me let our guest.
Please let me respond to that.
Elbert, you go first, and then we'll go right to.
Okay, sir, the caller's still on the line or listening.
I don't know, but go ahead.
The caller understand now we have gay families and we have lesbian families raising same-sex children. And again, there is no evidence that relationship is the determining factor on that child.
Well,
that's just a fact of it.
There is research. I can tell you what I know from the research. The advocates of same-sex marriage will say, just because you're raised by gay parents doesn't mean that the child is going to turn out to be gay, and that's true. But the research also shows that children raised by lesbian parents, because there's been more research on that, are more likely to at least experiment with homosexual activity. They're more likely to be sexually promiscuous regardless.
No, but I have to really object there, even as the host, because I've read all the literature, and I think that is so – I mean, I don't mind the arguments for and against, but that is really bogus.
I'll send you the study proving it from a gay researcher. Judith Stacy, a pro-gay researcher, reported that.
But the majority of kids who come out of gay marriages aren't gay.
Gay families.
No, I said that. I agree with that. But it does have, I think the caller has a point in that there is a role modeling that takes place, and I think society has a right to decide whether we think that's the role modeling that's desirable or undesirable.
But Mark, and to the caller and to my colleague there, currently we have relationships and children in relationships now, and the evidence contrary to what the caller said, which again talks about the demonization. And I go back to that. When you're demonizing people.
Sir, everything I said is based on research. We're a research council.
I go on with you, but hear the caller. The caller just assumes something. He assumed from information on the street.
Well, but he assumes that parents have an influence on their children as role models. I think that broad assumption is legitimate.
But he made the leap because they have this influence. They're going to, in fact, a certain way. It does not take into account society. It does not take into account our children, you know, how they raise up and how they understand. I mean, we have seen gay couples raise healthy, well-balanced children. They're in a loving home.
Gentlemen, I have to apologize and to my listeners who have been calling in the droves here at the end from both sides of this question who can't get in because we were plumb out of time. Elbert James, thank you so much. And Peter Sprigg, thank you so much for being with us tonight. I deeply appreciate you taking the time
with
our listeners. And Senator Jamie Raskin earlier. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. Mark Steiner, and happy Valentine's Day to all of our listeners today. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We are engineered today by Brian Boone. Our interns are Justin Green and Elizabeth Walker. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our previous shows and tonight's shows, and find out additional information on our guests and the topics we talk about and hear interviews you have yet to hear on the radio, please go to steinershow.org. And for public radio to be EAA 88.9 FM. The voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.
If you want to know your history, you can find it in jazz music. Sterling Brown, the Dean of Negro Poetry and Literature. I'm Doc Manning, host of In the Tradition. We will pursue, define, and broadcast what Sterling Brown said some time ago every Monday night from 8 p.m. to 12 midnight here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Next time on the Michael Eric Dyson Show, the 19th annual Pan-African Film Festival begins tomorrow in Los Angeles. The festival will highlight documentary and narrative features from filmmakers in the U.S., Ghana, South Africa, and Belgium, just to name a few. We'll speak to the host of the Pan-African Film Festival, actor Nate Parker, next time on the Michael Eric Dyson Show, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. here on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Hi, this